Camille Paglia, art historian, culture critic, founding Salon columnist, has a new book out, Glittering Images, a journey through art from Egypt to Star Wars, that looks closely at 29 wide-ranging works, paintings to sculpture to performance art to digital art, that she sees as defining works of art. Again, the title of the book, Glittering Images, A Journey Through Art from Egypt to Star Wars. It's a great pleasure to welcome back Camille Paglia to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Joe.
A delight to have you aboard. What brought you to define this so leanly?
Well, my dream was to produce a very slim book where the reader could hold the whole history of art in his or her hand, because today, and indeed for decades, the art book tends to be this very cumbersome, heavy doorstop. H.W. Janssen's famous History of Art weighs 7.5 pounds. I just felt that this intimidates the reader and spoils the effect of contemplating the work of art. So what I tried to do, this book, despite how slim it is, took 5 years. I crossed the centuries from Egypt all the way down to digital art today, and I was trying to reach a mixed audience, people who may have had no contact whatever with art and would appreciate a succinct introduction to it, right? And also people who know a great deal about art but who have become desensitized by the kind of pretentious rhetoric that goes on in the commercial art world today. But so one of my points in this book is that, despite my being an atheist, I see a religious or spiritual dimension to most of the great art in the history of the world, not just overtly religious art or sacred art, but even in work as abstract as Mondrian, which I think is going to come as a big surprise to many people who thought they knew modern art.
How wrenching was it, and I would assume, given 5 years, probably pretty wrenching, but how wrenching was it to dismiss things and to get it down to that 30?
Well, so hard to eliminate images that are favorites of mine, because I had dealt with art in my first book, Sexual Personae, which was published by Yale Press in 1990, I didn't have to address Michelangelo, Botticelli, Leonardo. They were all Greek art. It was already there. However, I still have beautiful images that I had no room for in Sexual Personae, like the Delphic charioteer, which is this gorgeous bronze statue of the winner of a chariot race, which is found at the sacred site of Delphi. And everyone knows the work, but no one's ever written on it. Okay? No one's ever produced an appreciation of it in artistic terms that are completely comprehensible to a general reader. So I tried to have a mix of difficult work with relatively simple or undiscovered work. There are several images in the book that I'm sure people have never seen before, or that are very, very obscure, like a drawing by George Grosz, the German expressionist that looks like it's right from today's headlines. It's a view of the haves and the have-nots, of the wealthy, arrogant capitalists exploiting the desperate working poor. So there's a wide range of topics in the book, and one of my greatest ambitions here was also to explain abstraction to a still generally skeptical mainstream audience. I'm well aware, through listening to talk radio, I'm a great fan of all talk radio, no matter what the political tenor of it is. Sports radio I listen to constantly as well. And I've become aware over the last 20 years because of the sort of the stupid controversies that were provoked by the art world and in arrogant museums in New York, many mainstream people think of the artist as shiftless, atheistic, anti-American, a bum. I mean, there was a lot of that actually in movies and TV programs of the 1950s. It's everywhere. Oh, abstract art's a lot of hogwash, and often in like a Perry Mason show, you'll get the beatnik, you know, artist will be the psychotic killer, or he's a rapist, or whatever it is. So that's one of the things I was trying to show in the book is the heroic and often self-mutilating mission of a lot of these of the first generation of abstract artists, and I would hope that a skeptical reader going through this book will feel the continuity. Okay, that there's no difference between the the monks who produce the beautiful image of the manuscript image from the Book of Kells, image from the Bible, gorgeously wrought. You wonder how could this have been done by hand, and there's really a wonderful continuity from that to modern abstract art. So the spiritual mission of the artist is one of the running themes of my book.
It seems in reading the book that it can go both ways, in the sense that history can help propel a piece of art and have it become more mainstream and more accepted as we evolve, and also that it can become a lightning rod upon its creation and continue to be that way through centuries.
Well, what I tried to show is that the avant-garde, which is so admired in modern times, justifiably so, is really just a blip in the history of art. Most art in worldwide has not been oppositional. It didn't have to be oppositional. Most artists spoke for their time and were at one with their time. So I think this is one of the ills that afflicts the current art world. I'm arguing in the book that the avant-garde is dead. Okay, the avant-garde was noble and to be admired, but it was rooted in the late 18th century in Romanticism. But it had its day, and Andy Warhol, my hero, killed it. Okay, the moment pop art took into itself all that imagery of commercial capitalism, of soup cans and of Brillo boxes and images from the movies of Marilyn Monroe and Elizabeth Taylor, the whole distance between the art world and the world of the mainstream world evaporated. Right? It's taken the art world decades to wake up to this fact that we're in a new era now, and the art of confrontation, of attack, is quite passé, which is why I was the only, person on the art side to criticize the Brooklyn Museum back in 1999 for its sensation exhibit, the image there by a British Nigerian artist, Chris Ofili, of the Madonna with her breasts made of elephant dung and porn pictures plastered all around it and so on. The art world wanted to defend this. Yes, this proves the vitality of art, that there could be any kind of shock or outrage in the general community. Oh, those Philistines out there, we are the elect, we are the elite, we know better. Ah, so lame, utterly lame. And before that, a work of even more mediocre, okay, The Piss Christ, okay, by Andre Serrano, which has been a lightning rod and been attacked actually physically in various places that has been shown, which was a plastic crucifix submerged in a beaker of the artist's urine and then photographed and blown up to large scale. And it's an interesting idea, but it's ultimately stupid, okay, and juvenile, and the false fame that work gained, I think, was extremely damaging to the art world. And so the art world shot itself in the foot, in my view, with this silly endorsement of works that of very inferior quality. And what was the end result? As I say in the preface to Glittering Images, I say, who paid the price of that? School children everywhere in this country, where art programs have been cut because their rationale is not appreciated by financially strapped local school boards and municipalities and so on. Okay, right? It's not the art world didn't pay the price of that. So this arrogant separation from mainstream values and from the concerns of ordinary citizens, I think, has been absolutely fatal to the arts, and it explains why there is nothing of interest coming from the art world. I speak as a teacher, career teacher at art schools. I've been teaching for over 40 years, and most of my career has been in art schools. At the University of the Arts, where I am, I've been since 1984, so I belong to this world. But it should be obvious to everyone, okay, that that social media and mass media have completely overwhelmed the world of the fine arts, and I think this is a world problem. Now, I'm a great admirer of pop art. I've always got in trouble for it in grad school. I wasn't taken seriously at Yale grad school in the late 1960s for my endorsement of popular culture. But I believe in quality in pop, and quality in the fine arts, and these are the standards which have been completely abandoned as hierarchical and moralistic and Eurocentric. By the identity politics regime in academe.
As we wrap up our conversation, I note something that you write in the book, which is the most important question about art is what lasts and why. Definitions of beauty and standards of taste are constantly changing, but persistent patterns obtain. I subscribe to a cyclic view of culture. Styles grow, peak, and decay, but flower again through periodic revival. A way of asking this question, which is, will this always be a fight? Will we always have, because it is cyclic, will we always have these ebbs and flows and debate over art?
Oh, I think absolutely, but the style of postmodernism or poststructuralism that is taught in colleges and universities today denies that history exists. Okay? It denies that any value inheres in art except for its economic meaning, its material meaning at a particular moment, and that values in art are determined by an elite for to support its own power. Now, I think this is nonsense because you can tell what is important in the history of art by the artists themselves. It's the artists who have created the history of art. The influence of one distant artist on another one centuries later, that it signals importance, that signals value. So it's really the artists who have made that great lineage, and its critics' function to go and to illumine that. But unfortunately today, students in the elite schools are taught to attack art, to look for what's wrong with it. It's homophobic, it's racist, it's sexist or classist or whatever. So the art of appreciation, of loving art, of responding to it, that's what I'm trying to give back in this book. And in that, I think I'm more in league with real artists and not with these trendy, theory-infatuated professors.
The name of the book, Glittering Images, A Journey Through Art from Egypt to Star Wars. It is published by Vintage. Camille Paglia, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Glittering Images, published by Vintage. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.